The treasured tools of tyrants. All over the world, we are seeing courageous individuals responding to the Great Reset with great resistance, such as the Freedom Convoy to Ottawa and all over Canada. Now we're seeing great repression, seeking to crush resistance, not only in Canada, but also in Australia, in New Zealand, in Europe, in the United States, and even in South Africa. What are the tools and the tactics of these tyrants? How can we best recognize, resist, and respond to repression? The tools of tyrants include boycotts and blacklisting. I grew up in Rhodesia, where we were boycotted and blacklisted from everything. The Olympics, the Paralympics, Olympics, you name it, whatever it was. Even the Winter Olympics, not that I think Rhodesians ever had anyone to contribute in that area. But boycotts and blacklisting is one of the tools that the United Nations and the ilk have always used. And then there's blame shifting. Blame the victim for your own policies. And bullying. Of course, censorship, character assassination, discrediting, demonizing, distracting, defunding, deplatforming, excluding, and economic warfare. Red China is the model for the New World Order in so many ways. Surveillance society with social credit systems where they rate you according to everything. You attend a party rally, positive point. You make a critical social media post, negative point, and so on and so forth. At a certain point, you are in the red and they can take away your license, fire you from your work, etc., etc., or even send you to the gulag. In Red China, in 2020, they already had 600 million surveillance cameras set up around the country. Of course, there's fake news and false flags. These are also favored treasured tools of tyrants. And gossip and gaslighting, lies and libel. And of course, calling people horrible names like racist, Nazi, homophobe, bigot, and so on. Gaslighting comes from the term that was first used in a film in the 1930s with Ingrid Bergman, where the wife was being abused by her husband, and the gaslight was part of the element of the film, not that that was actually how he was abusing her, but gaslighting now tends to refer to where the person makes the victim feel to blame for their abuse. And so gaslighting is when you are able to project onto the victim the sense of guilt for what you're doing to them. So that's very, very popular. Sanctions, of course, they've always believed in sanctions, economic sanctions on Rhodesia and South Africa, not on Red China or the Soviet Union, of course, but sanctions on countries that were resisting communism, not those who actually were communist. Intimidation and interference. Toxic terminology. They weaponize words these days. And, of course, lots of threats and terrorism. Just take, for example, BLM, Black Lives Matter. That was a lot of intimidation, terrorism. Of course, tyrants love propaganda and psychological warfare. Revolution and repression. Yesterday's revolutionaries become tomorrow's dictators. And so those who came to power through revolution stay in power through repression. In Canada, we can see Justin Trudeau using all of these favorite tools of tyrants against those who disagree with him. The Canadians have, for quite a time, been using martial law against churches, even arresting this pastor for continuing to have church services during the COVID lockdown. And literally padlocking churches, bolting and chaining churches, putting chain links fences around church property so that people couldn't even gather in the churchyard for services. After almost 2 years of repressive rule in what the Canadian state claimed the power to determine who could work, when they could work, how they could work, where they could work, what they needed to wear, and whether they were allowed to worship or not, and even what chemicals needed to be injected into their body, there was, for some reason, rising resistance. Now, when you push the Canadians too far, that even the Canadians are protesting, it's got to be pretty serious, because they've got to be some of the most law-abiding, peaceful people on the planet. But instead of responding to the growing outrage over government overreach and intrusion into everyday lives of communities and congregations and families and individuals, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau doubled down with even more repressive rules, crushing working class people such as the truckers, who are just asking to be able to carry on their lives and their businesses and survive. When tens of thousands of people rose up in the Freedom Convoy to demand the end of medical tyranny, vaccine mandates, and the masquerade madness, there were vast amounts of people all over Canada from one side to the other, hundreds of thousands who gathered to cheer them on the way in freezing cold weather, coming out in minus 20 degree weather, waving Canadian flags, cheering them along the streets, being on the overpasses and on the bridges. Hundreds of thousands of Canadians from one side of the country to the other came out in enthusiastic support for the Freedom Convoy initiative. Justin Trudeau responded with the favourite tools of tyrants. He slandered the truckers and their supporters as right-wing extremists, racists, misogynists, white supremacists, science deniers, and Nazis. Well, how original is that? I mean, this is just typical of tyrants that instead of dealing with the issues, they seek to slander the people who disagree with them. And Justin Trudeau said he is sickened by the sight of so many racist flags. I'm looking, I'm wondering, where are these racist flags? I mean, is the Canadian flag a racist flag? There the people were in Ottawa, and there they are, waving these horrible flags again. Why are they waving Canadian flags in Canada? And you can see people there with the children, they were there with the pets, there were jumpy castles, it was just an average mom teaching her girls to stand up to bullies. Justin Trudeau is a bully. Freedom over fear. Others would speak about faith over fear. And 2022 is 1776. I think they're hoping for something like the American Declaration of Independence, something like that. More of these racist flags, I see. As Socrates observed, when a debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser. And British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady, would often repeat this quote when her opponents resorted to ad hominem arguments and slander. Ad hominem, arguing against the man, against the person. So as in soccer, you meant to play the ball, not the man. To kick a fellow player rather than the ball is to be guilty of a foul. I mean, that's the whole point of soccer. Kick the ball. Don't kick the individual that you're having a disagreement with. And so in any debate, the correct thing is deal with the issue. Deal with the objective. Be objective, not subjective. This isn't about your emotions or, you know, are you stupid and you're only saying that because you're evil. And you don't know the people. Stick to the issue. I mean, if we can deal with the issue, we can score a goal. Rather than addressing the issues being protested against by the Freedom Convoy and the hundreds of thousands of people supporting them, Justin Trudeau chose to character assassinate the protesters and then blame shift by hypocritically accusing the truckers of interfering with the economy and people's everyday lives. You've got to be kidding. Who has just been sabotaging and suffocating the economy and everyone's lives for the previous 2 years? Justin Trudeau and his Liberal government. And now he's accusing the truckers of interfering with their lives and blocking... He's been blocking everyone's lives for the last 2 years. And how hypocritical is that? After 2 years of suffocating the economy and people's everyday lives with lockdown lunacy, masquerade madness, COVID cult, salvation by vaccination mandates, it's incredible that Justin Trudeau could have the audacity to blame the very people who were trying to open up the economy and bring freedom back to people's everyday lives for the very policies he was enforcing. Trudeau mobilized his minions to persuade GoFundMe to freeze the money raised. They'd raised something like $10 million, and I think they got GoFundMe to freeze the $9 million that hadn't yet been spent. Of course, you cannot have major trucker protests without a lot of funding. Obviously, fuel is super expensive at this time, and to drive from one side of Canada to the other, you know, like that can be 5,000 miles for some of the people. That's a lot of fuel, and it's extremely cold. They've got to keep the engines going so they don't freeze to death overnight and things like this. So they needed funding to be able to do this protest. also the people weren't able to work and so on and so forth. So the GoFundMe was an important part. So I've never heard this done with any protesters before. But they got the money, and GoFundMe wanted to give the money away to other charities such as BLM. Well, fortunately, there was legal movements brought against them by, for example, Ted Cruz, who is the senator for Texas, and he's saying, wait a minute, GoFundMe is an American company, you're breaking American laws, you're not allowed to do this, and so on and so forth. So they then returned the money to the donors. Well, then GiveSendGo, which is a Christian faith-based group which does not charge any percentage, unlike GoFundMe, who takes a heavy percentage for themselves, GiveSendGo gives 100% of the money that they raise directly to the cause. It started out to fund churches, missions, ministries, and so on. And when I heard about GiveSendGo saying they will do it, I thought, just wait for them to be taken down. The next day, I'm wanting to send a link to this website to our office manager to see maybe this is a group that we should think of, and the website was down, hacked already. They didn't just hack GiveSendGo, they doxed them. They published all the information out on the internet of who had given donations to, either through GoFundMe or through GiveSendGo, was put out in the public domain, and the people who had supported these causes, even for as little as $50, were getting death threats, getting harassed, phone ringing off the hook, people who ran businesses being threatened, we're going to throw bricks through your windows, going to get a Molotov cocktail at night and things like this. Absolutely shocking that they then prevented even GiveSendGo from sending money through, just froze it. Whatever happened to freedom? Sanctions and economic warfare are popular tools of tyrants. Now we've seen Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau emulating the communist Chinese dictatorship that he has expressed such admiration for. Justin Trudeau, 2013, on TV, said, when he's asked what government in the world does he most admire, and he says, there's a level of admiration I actually have for China. Because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn the economy around on a dime. He recognized their dictatorship, a basic dictatorship. I would have called it a brutal dictatorship, but they crush the people. Red China has the Guinness Book of Records for being the biggest mass murdering dictatorship on earth. Mao Zedong killed 68 million people, and they're not done yet. They're still shooting people in the head. The Chinese government is the most brutal, sadistic slave state, and most of what we get from Red China in the shops is probably made with slave labor. Much is documented in the Black Book of Communism and Death by Government, just in case Justin Trudeau would like some objective factual standards. But is there anyone on the planet so ignorant as to not know that Red China is a vicious dictatorship built on the bones of tens of millions of people? But he has gone many times to China as an honored guest, and Justin Trudeau has also gone to Vietnam. He obviously admires those sort of countries too, and Cuba, of course, really loved Uncle Fidel. And Klaus Schwab is on record, and you can see this interview where Klaus Schwab, I think it was 2017, and he was in the Harvard University John F. Kennedy School of Government, and he was speaking about his global youth that he's trained through World Economic Forum, and he says, we've infiltrated every government on earth, we've penetrated even to cabinet, and Justin Trudeau, he gave us his favorite, and that Justin Trudeau, that half of, and he said more than half of the Canadian cabinets are our people, the ones who've gone through their mentorship training program, WF people. So Justin Trudeau's his boy. And of course, Bill Gates. Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, Justin Trudeau, peas in a pod. And by the way, Justin Trudeau and his family make millions out of vaccine production in Canada. So they're not disinterested. There is, what do we call it, conflicts of interest here. There's a book that came out recently on Red Handed on how American elites are getting rich helping China. And of course, Biden is completely owned by China. But it looks like so is Justin Trudeau. There's a lot of corruption across the seas between Red China, and they own a lot of Hollywood companies. Think when you last saw any film where the Red Chinese were the bad guys. Even British James Bond films. If there's a Chinese secret agent, they're an ally. The bad guy is not the communist Chinese. Communist Chinese are never the bad guys in the movies. They even made this remake of Red Dawn, where initially it was Red China invades America. And once the whole film was finished, they paid $1 million for the company, sent it back to production to take out every single frame that indicated Chinese and put in the North Korean flag and North Korean. $1 million just to re-edit it so as not to upset China. Declaring a state of emergency, Justin Trudeau mobilized his police to bully and bludgeon the peaceful protesters in the streets of Ottawa, to freeze their bank accounts, to confiscate their vehicles. Remember, those are big rigs, which is their livelihood. Threatening to take away their children and place them under state-controlled welfare. Have their pets assigned to shelters where they would be euthanized if not claimed within 7 days. What kind of government goes after the pets and children of protesters? I mean, have you ever heard of this sort of thing before? This is about as extreme as it gets. And the, not surprisingly, the previous chief of police of Ottawa refused to do what Justin Trudeau wanted, so he was forced to resign, effectively fired, and then they got this new man in who was willing to be the thug that Justin wanted. And does this look like a dangerous rioter resisting arrest? They had snipers on the rooftops all around. They came in battle gear and with automatic weapons. I mean, bear in mind that the Canadian population are basically disarmed, about as disarmed as the poor people in China. And so is it even necessary to come with weapons of war? They came with armored cars and they came with cavalry. And they rode their cavalry into the crowd, knocking people over, trampling people underfoot, including an Eskimo woman who was using a walker who was handicapped. They literally trampled her under the horse's hooves. Initially, it was reported that she died, but she did not. She survived. But even more shocking, some people were able to get screenshots of Canadian police laughing about this and saying, you know, I'm having a donut and coffee to celebrate. You know, this is great, outstanding, wonderful. Cheers, crew. Here's to some more OT this weekend for our on-call members. Don't kick all of them out till our next week's group gets our turn. And they, you know, looks like they need more leg into hand. And all kinds of cheering about the brutality to the protesters. And the police going into action, using far more force than needed, including against journalists, walking around just smashing windows of the people's, these are the campers. So people live in there. That's not a small window to open the door. That's just smashing windows so that the people could freeze to death inside if they stay there. Why would the police attack peaceful protesters in Ottawa? And look at those clubs. This is not a normal little baton. These are actual hulking great big clubs, and they're using them on the people. And it's not that these people were violent rioters damaging property or threatening lives. By the way, just notice, if you think the army, they're not army, the Canadian army refused to mobilize. Those are police, it actually says police in there. So the people dressed in green uniforms, I don't know which unit, but they have police written on them. Because apparently the Canadian army flat refused to mobilize. Why would you need to handcuff or zip tie in this case, women, have them kneel in the snow in front of you? What's the point? Not content with arresting the peaceful protesters, Justin Trudeau's Liberal government are determined to destroy their lives, not only of the protesters, but also of those who support them, even with small donations. They're going after the people and the chief of police in Ottawa. We're going after you. This is going to carry on for months. We're going to prosecute everyone who supported the truckers, everyone who came to support, the pedestrians on. If you supported the truckers, we are going after you. We're going to freeze your accounts. A person who made a $50 donation has had a bank account frozen, can't buy anything, and so on. The details of those who've given donations to Freedom Convoy have been published online, leading to much harassment and threats being unleashed upon simple working class people and entrepreneurs, such as this poor lady who's running an ice cream shop, and she's getting threatened with, she said the phone rang off the hook for days. Threats of petrol bombs, threats to her children, threats to her life, threats to burn out their business. All of this is made possible by the pervasive propaganda which has demonized simple working class people who wanted their lives back. Fake news has enabled Trudeau's tyranny. And I can't help but think back to the previous Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, who was Prime Minister of Canada back in the 1970s, who led the pack in the hostility and the sanctions against Rhodesia. Pierre Trudeau was as vicious as they come in enforcing every kind of Commonwealth sanctions on Rhodesia, and demonized the Rhodesians such a case that people, even to this day around the world, are not concerned about the brutality of Mugabe's regime against the farmers in Zimbabwe, stealing their farms, stealing livelihood, killing, torturing them, because they're racist. If they're racist, they deserve to be killed, and so on. Despite the fact that Rhodesia never had any racial laws, despite the fact it was a qualified franchise, and the fact that 85% of the Rhodesian army and police were black volunteers, and we were black and white together fighting against red, yet somehow Pierre Trudeau labelled every Rhodesian, I presume that included the black Rhodesians, who were fighting against communism as racist. And therefore, they deserved everything they got. That's what propaganda does. It justifies atrocities and a callous mentality towards victims, which is why so many people around the world don't care when they hear about white South African farmers being tortured to death and murdered in the most brutal ways, because they're white South Africans. They deserve it. And so that's what propaganda does. Demonize people. False flags have also been used to distract from the primary message of the thousands of truckers and the hundreds of thousands of their supporters. I've been trying to find a picture, but apparently there was somewhere somebody had a Confederate flag at one of the rallies. But that person was the only person wearing a full mask where you couldn't even see his eyes. And people were saying, fed, fed, out. And the person who captured that picture just happened to be Justin Trudeau's personal photographer. It's hard not to take this as a false flag, literally. Words are weaponized. Terminology becomes toxic. They start using, they speak about insurgents and the insurgency and the insurrection, and they use explosive words that try to demonize and criminalize peaceful truckers who are guilty of nothing more than a parking violation. Canadians are now being warned that the word freedom is subversive, and freedom is code for white supremacy and right-wing extremism. Did you know that? That's just news to me. Freedom is a subversive word. Wow. It would appear that the Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada is using George Orwell's 1984 book as a manual rather than recognizing it as a warning of tyrannical tools and tactics that should be avoided. George Orwell warned of the dangers of totalitarian government and the subversion of language, where the Ministry of Truth, mini-truth, deals with lies and propaganda, demonizing the opponents of the state. Because as George Orwell said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. Just think of how the Americans often refer to an assassination. Termination with extreme prejudice. Bombing of civilians. Saturation bombing. Strategic bombing. Murdering civilians. Collateral damage. Yeah. Or just think of how they refer to murder in South Africa. Termination of pregnancy. Removal of the product of conception, the POC, T-O-P of POC, and all this sort of thing. Instead of the fetus, instead of referring to the baby, and so on. Let's just dehumanize again and again. The further a society drifts from the truth, the more that society will hate those who speak the truth. Truth is hate for those who hate the truth. Making enemies of the state unpersons, vaporizing them and ensuring that their message and their identity disappears down the memory hole. Now, just as an example of how this works, let me go back to it. I was at a Communist Party meeting, and they were talking about the people shall govern. This early 1990s. And I said, well, I'm one of the people. And they said, no, you're not. And I said, I'm not a people? He said, no, you're not a people. I said, who are the people? He said, people are members of the party. I said, which party? Communist Party. So people are not members of the Communist Party aren't people? That's right. And that's dead serious. That is the terminology of communists. When they say the people should govern, and when they speak about people, they mean the party. And if you want to know how to be an unperson, that's exactly what George Orwell was warning about in 1948 when he wrote the book 1984. The ministry of plenty, or mini plenty, deals with the rationing and ensures starvation. And the ministry of peace, or mini peace, deals with war. And the war is not meant to be won, the war is meant to be continuous. No win, continuous, ongoing, never-ending wars. And the ministry of love, mini love, deals with torture to ensure subservience and obedience from the masses, as they called them. Now, he called it right, and he's not a fiction writer conjuring this up in his imagination. He's basing this on what he saw in the Soviet Union and what he saw as a propagandist in the BBC during the Second World War. Big Brother is watching. INGSOC, English socialism. War is peace, slavery is freedom, and ignorance is strength. All from 1984. And so no wonder some people have done this graffiti, COVID-1984. Yes, it is. No wonder many refer to it as COVID-1984. George Orwell's prophetic warning political satire of 1984 seems ominously relevant today. The real virus actually is communism. That's the real threat. In the name of democracy, the peaceful protests of many tens of thousands of Canadians are suppressed. In the name of law and order, the rule of law is suspended and effectual martial law is enforced. I mean, how anti-democratic is that? Those who normally trumpet tolerance, crush dissent, and outlaw freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, freedom of worship, freedom of opinion, and freedom of the press. Even journalists have been warned not to cover the police actions, and journalists have been attacked and arrested. I mean, you've got to see some of these things to believe it. To think that could happen in Canada, what we once thought of as one of the most peaceful and free democratic Western nations on earth, now it's one of the most oppressive. As 1 Timothy 6 verse 4 says, he is conceited. He has an unhealthy interest in controversies and arguments that result in envy, quarreling, malicious talk, and evil suspicions. Just take as the double standards of Trudeau. When BLM, Burn, Loot, Murder, Baal, Lucifer, Moloch, broke out in North America in 2020, there were real rioters, and they were violent, and they were using Molotov cocktails on people, and they were attacking the police, and they were burning police stations, and they were looting shops, causing billions of dollars of damage. They destroyed whole suburbs and areas and inner cities, just devastated, destroyed, looted, demolished. And this BLM movement, at the height of its destructiveness, out went Justin Trudeau, wore the mask, took the knee, and expressed the support for BLM. Now, he couldn't even send a representative to negotiate with the truckers or receive the memorandum or hear what their concerns were, what their suggestions were. And more of the Canadian police were encouraged to do the same, sign of subservience to riotous mobs. Think how differently they responded with the peaceful truckers. Political correctness is actually demographic suicide. Toleration is a device used to introduce a new law system as a prelude to a new intolerance. You see, they're not against the police. They're just against objective police. They want to replace the police with their thugs and gangs who will then use the uniforms. And you can see what's going on now. A lot of people wearing the police uniforms are actually thugs. They're criminals. They're going against the law. This, if you go back to the Bolshevik Revolution, when the Tsarist police were dissolved, don't think that the Bolsheviks didn't have their own police. They replaced the Bolshevik police with the Cheka, which later became the NKVD, which later became the KGB, who were just brutal Bolshevik thugs wearing leather coats who were no better than the worst kinds of gangsters and criminals. But they had a uniform. And today, you can go to Australia and you can see police behaving like thugs, beating up on people who just don't want to wear the mask and have had enough of the lockdowns. And coming in, did they treat the BLM like this? And all over the world, you see other governments following suit. Luke 6, verse 22 to 26, our Lord Jesus said, blessed are you when men hate you and when they exclude you and revile you and cast out your name as evil. For the sake of the Son of Man, rejoice in it and leap for joy. For indeed your reward is great in heaven. For in like manner their fathers did to the prophets. Woe to you when all men speak well of you, for that is how their fathers treated the false prophets. As I was told often at Hospital Christian Fellowship, if you're not being criticized, you're not doing your job. A missionary's job is to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. If you're not being criticized, maybe on the broad road leading to destruction. This narrow road, there's a lot of criticism. It's interesting how, in spite of all the warnings in Scripture against gossip and slander and talebearing, just how much stock we tend to place in people's opinions. It's said that where there's smoke, there is fire. However, that smoke might be little more than dust and hot air. Mark Twain observed, a lie can travel around the world while truth is still getting its boots on. Well, that's just before the age of the internet. Now the lie can go 10 times around the world before truth has got its boots on. And you can have trial by keyboard. And just look at what happens whenever some decent person is trying to get into the judiciary in America, such as when they tried to have Judge Kavanaugh. And he was subjected to the most hideous kinds of response. And why did they put Roe yes, Kava nope? Because he's perceived as a pro-life justice, and they didn't want him reversing the Roe v. Wade and banning abortion, because Roe v. Wade is the landmark court case that legalized abortion in 1973 in America. And so they brought out all kinds of accusers, accusing him of hideous things. And then later, once he was sworn in, just little known, Kavanaugh accused admits to lying. Oh, well, that's a surprise. And third Kavanaugh accuser just validated claims that she should be criminally prosecuted for lying. And Kavanaugh's accuser, this Christine Ford, turned out that she was, in fact, nothing but a serial liar and accused of a highly immoral person who totally invented the accusations against him. When Judge Roy Moore, he's the one who put the Ten Commandments statue up in the Alabama courthouse and got all kinds of problems as a result, when he ran for Senate, they brought out people to accuse all sorts of things to him. And then they brought out a second Republican candidate to split the vote so that to prevent him being elected, and he was very popular in Alabama. And they brought out accusers accusing him of all sorts of hideous things. And sure enough, once he lost the case for the Senate, they came out and found out that the accusers had ties to drug dealers and they were liars. And oh, what a surprise. Roy Moore's accuser admits he didn't even touch her. Total fakes, liars, liars, more lies. But they had their several weeks of fame while destroying the chances of getting a God-fearing man elected to the Senate who would stand up for the rights of life. So Judge Roy Moore accused of groping a girl while he was in college, not fit to serve in the U.S. Senate, whereas Ted Kennedy, who left a girl to drown in his car, didn't tell anyone for 10 hours while she was running out of air in a car that was upside down the creek. And he's elected to the Senate seven times, serves 46 years in the Senate. Do you think there's double standards out there somewhere? Anyway, Judge Moore was innocent of what they accused him of. But trial by anecdote and trial by media and trial by social media is not exactly the way to do it. There's got to be eyewitnesses. It's got to be confronting. Personally, you've got to have a chance for responding, because the first to present his case seems right until another comes and cross-examines him, the Bible says. When I first heard Ronald Reagan in Washington, D.C., 1988, I heard him say, it's not that our liberal friends are uneducated. It's just that so much of what they know just isn't so. And it's true. So many liberal leftists, they know for sure all Rhodesians are racist. All South Africans are racist Nazis. They know it, but it isn't so. They know that the farmers murdered by people who follow the kill the Boer thing deserve it. They know it without a shadow of a doubt, but it just isn't so. There's a whole lot of things that people know, which isn't so. The great Baptist preacher, the prince of preachers, Charles Spurgeon, warned, believe not half you hear. Repeat not half you believe. When you hear an evil report, halve it. Then quarter it. Then say nothing about the rest of it. He should know. Great reformer John Calvin declared, no greater injury can be inflicted upon men than to ruin their reputation. They used to have that saying, give a dog a bad name and you might as well hang him. That's true. To destroy a person's reputation is, I mean, it's character assassination. It's the worst kind of harm that you can do to anyone. You must really hate someone to want to ruin their reputation. Of all the members in the body, there's none so serviceable to Satan as the tongue. John Calvin wrote that there's nothing more slippery or loose than the tongue. The scriptures command us in Titus 3 verse 2 to slander no one, to be peaceable and considerate, and to show true humility towards all men. Here's one of the problems. The people willing to believe the worst about prominent leaders are normally people who are proud people, and they want to see people bend themselves, pull down. A lot of people get a satisfaction over hearing scandals. That's why scandal rags are so popular. And they somehow feel like if they can pull down the people above them, it'll somehow lift themselves up. There's a lot of pride involved in slander. Ephesians 4:31 says, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. You see, slander is inseparable from malice. Gossip remains prevalent within the church, though, and the arrogance, the bitterness, the jealousy, the malice that so often goes along with it remains unchallenged. Today, it's more common to publish the slanders than to silence and rebuke them. It's a fact that whoever gossips to you will gossip about you. People who talk behind someone else's back will talk behind your back too. The teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ are very clear. Everything do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Was Justin Trudeau treating the truckers the way he would want to be treated if he was protesting the government? And you could just use this analogy in many things. Do to others what you want them to do to you. Blessed are you when men insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before them. Why then do we continue to place such value upon people's opinions? After all, mass murdering tyrants like Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong, the two worst mass murderers in all of history, they were not just Man of the Year of Time magazine, they were Man of the Year many times of Time magazine, frequently. Some of the most frequent Men of the Year of Slime magazine. The five pillars of liberal faith include name-calling and projection of guilt. This is typical. I mean, Justin Trudeau is just a typical liberal, and they speak tolerance till they're in power, and then there's no tolerance. I remember the same people who were against all censorship. When they got into power, they suddenly put censorship on everything. The ones who wanted complete freedom, moment in power, they lock you down worse than we ever had before, and so on. Yesterday's freedom fighter becomes tomorrow's dictator. Galatians 1 verse 10. Paul says, am I now trying to win the approval of men or of God? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a servant of Christ. We only have two choices, really, to try to please God or to please man. And you can't really do both at the same time. God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His ways are higher than our ways. Our Lord Jesus Christ warned us many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. Now, when I read that at first, I thought, many? Yeah, maybe some. Couldn't be many. Stay in Christian work long enough and you'll see there's a lot of people who fall by the wayside, who don't have stamina, and who are not satisfied to just fail and fall away. They've got a backstab afterwards. So a lot of backstabbers, a lot of betrayal, and a lot of hating of people who are persevering and blessed in God's work. King David wrote in Psalm 101 verse 5, whoever slanders his neighbor, him I will put to silence. Whoever has haughty eyes and a proud heart, him I will not endure. Now, when King David spoke about putting to silence, you know what he means. He means killing them, actually. Executing them. That's the way he put people to silence. Although, you know, we don't have to be that extreme, but that's how seriously a man after God's own heart thought of those who slanders his neighbor. And by the way, while we're talking about King David, what would King David think about confiscating truckers' pets and euthanizing them? When the prophet came and told him about a man who had a little lamb that was like a member of the family, slept in his arms, ate food from the table, and he heard that a neighbor had come and taken his pet and killed and eaten this pet, King David was greatly angered. He said, the man who's done this deserves to die. Now, that's 3,000 years ago, so you might not think of King David as being soft and sentimental, but when it came to pets, he recognized, this is disgusting, that you would take someone's beloved pet and kill it. To think that Trudeau gets to the point of threatening to take away people's children, put them in foster care, and take away their pets and euthanize them because they're demonstrating against them. And they're committing the serious fine of illegally parking. The scriptures employ us in James 4, verse 11, brothers, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against his neighbor or judges him speaks against the law and judges it. There's a disturbing tendency seen throughout the church, seen regularly in homes where they have roast pastor for Sunday lunch, to set ourselves up continually as judges of those who are better than we are. Many have the gift of criticism and a ministry of discouragement. And so there are books out there on antagonists in the church, how to murder a minister. Please don't shoot, I'm wounded already. These are just titles out there. 1 Peter 2 verse 1, therefore rid yourself of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Slander, hypocrisy, envy, malice, deceit, they all go together. As the scripture so plainly shows, a slander of every kind is inseparable from malice, deceit, hypocrisy, and envy. Notice the middle letter of pride is I. And the middle letter of lie is I. And the middle letter of sin is I. And the middle letter of Lucifer is also I. Self-centered pride is at the root of our desire to slander great men and women of the past and to drag down those whom God has raised up. Do you know one of the first mission conferences I ever went to? Sort of ridiculing and speaking against the missionaries of the past. One of the biggest missions conferences I ever went to, Gikawi, Global Consultation World Evangelism in Pretoria. 4,200 delegates from around the world. The first item on the agenda was a skit which would have been embarrassing for a youth group, which tried to make David Livingstone out to be an idiot. I think, what are we all doing here? If Livingstone is a failure, the rest of us might as well go home. I mean, how could we do better? And yet, the amount of missions conferences that slander the missionaries of the past, missiologists, like Nico Smith from Stellenbosch University, slandering the missionaries in some of the worst ways. I think, what an arrogant person. A man who, when he is asked after 7 years of lecturing, one of my friends who's getting to his graduating year, he was a chaplain army, he's telling me this, said, I asked Nico Smith, why in 7 years have you not once heard one word or thought from Andrew Murray? Not even his book, The Key to the Missionary Problem. And Nico Smith spat out, because Andrew Murray was no theologian. Andrew Murray had his doctorate in theology before he turned 20. He'd studied in Scotland and in Netherlands at some of the greatest universities in the world. He is the greatest author in South Africa's history. He's produced more books, something like 200 titles, translated in more languages than any other South African history. Certainly he had the most blessed ministry. The greatest revival in South African history took place under his time. Who's going to be quoting from Nico Smith? Andrew Murray is the most blessed pastor in the history of South Africa, and he's slandered by missiologists. We have the kind of people out there who want to drag down the people above. When I've heard people coming and slandering everyone from David Noble, James Dobson, Reverend Earl Stegan, James Kennedy, and others, I said to them, why don't you go out and open up a better ministry and shame them by doing a better job than they're doing? No, but these people don't intend to do anything good. They just intend to slander those who do. It's just so amazing. Hudson Taylor wrote, if the Spirit of God works mightily, we may be sure that the spirit of evil will also be active. I was also told by one missionary, when God gives you something important to do, Satan will send people to waste your time, detract, discourage, or derail you. On a Zambezi expedition, pioneer missionary explorer David Livingstone was afflicted by interpersonal conflicts amongst his team, leading to every one of the Europeans abandoning him in the field, even his own brother Charles. By the time he returned to England 7 years later, Livingstone found that his disgruntled ex-co-workers had so spread an evil report against him that no one came out to welcome him back from his second missionary journey. He was ostracized, presumed guilty without even a chance to defend himself, and when he returned on his third missionary journey to Africa, not a person saw him off at the docks, not a person waved as he sailed away, and they never saw him in England alive again. Nevertheless, on the 100th anniversary of his discovering Victoria Falls and mapping it and naming it, measuring it, they unveiled this monument on the 16th of November 1955 at Victoria Falls. As somebody pointed out, nobody erects monuments to critics. The greatest Baptist preacher of all time, Charles Spurgeon, was actually the target of vicious and slanderous attacks by the Baptist Union of his day. He was actually excluded from the Baptist Union. Now his books are textbooks at the Baptist colleges. I know, I studied using Charles Spurgeon's textbooks. And his statue stands outside the Baptist Union headquarters, the same headquarters that he was excommunicated from in his day. George Whitefield, one of the greatest evangelists of all time and a key figure in the great evangelical awakening, was actually excluded from the Church of England, not allowed to preach in any Church of England that he had served so faithfully, the man most associated with the great evangelical awakening. Today, the Church of England and South Africa have named the college after George Whitefield. How the wheel turns. Dr. James Kennedy, in his book, Delighting God, writes, if you rise just a little bit above the common herd, if you achieve just a modicum more success than your neighbors, most surely those barbs of criticism are going to be shot your way. To avoid criticism, he said, do nothing. Say nothing. Be nothing. There's no defense against reproach except obscurity. The more prominent, the more blessed, the more criticized, which is why some of the greatest ministries on earth have so many websites dedicated to attacking him. They've all got disgruntled exes campaigning against him. And that's why Donald Trump is probably one of the most criticized people on earth these days, because he is so prominent and successful. Delighting God quotes one wise old man, if I try to read, much less answer, all the criticisms made of me and all the attacks leveled against me, this office would have to be closed to all other business. I do the best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep on doing this right down to the very end. If the end brings me out all wrong, 10 angels swearing I've been right would make no difference. If the end brings me out all right, then what is said against me now will not amount to anything. There is no doubt that adversity can build character. A faith that cannot be tested cannot be trusted. You don't know how strong you are until you're put in a crisis. You don't know how strong your faith is until you're taken through the mill. You don't know whether your friends are fair weather friends or real friends unless they're friends in adversity. And that's the point. The great thing about times of trial and slander is you get to know who your real friends are and who are not. And we know that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Such trials should drive us to prayer. They should humble us. They should deepen our devotional lives as we search the scriptures and say, what is God saying to me through this? It can also enable us to empathize and comfort those who suffer such injustices. Christians suffer unjust criticism should find opportunities to glorify God and to witness for Christ. Ultimately, God's opinion and approval is the only one that counts. It is he whom we should continually seek to please. We are not to be men pleasers, we are to be seeking to please God. So, blessed are you when all men hate you, and when they exclude you, and revile you, and cast out your name as evil, for the sake of the Son of Man, rejoice in it there, and leap for joy. For indeed your reward is great in heaven. For in like manner, their fathers did to the prophets. As United States President Theodore Roosevelt observed, it's not the critic that counts, nor the man who points out how the strong man stumbled, nor whether the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself for a worthy cause, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least he fails while doing greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who knew neither victory nor defeat. Everything in life is a test of character. Extreme situations expose and bring out the best or the worst in people. The true flavor of a tea bag is only tasted after it's been placed in hot water. And so it is with ourselves. Our reputation is what people think we are. Our character is what God knows we are. And this is only revealed under extreme circumstances. So, when troubles and tribulations come, when you're insulted and excluded and reviled and mistreated, do what our Lord Jesus commanded. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy. On the other hand, woe unto you when all men speak well of you. I wrote the book Character Assassins, dealing with ecclesiastical tyrants and terrorists, and I got seven other authors to contribute, so it was eight contributors, including Brian Apshire and my father-in-law, Reverend Bill Bathman, and Joel Beakey, and many others. It was endorsed by many Christian leaders around the world. And I've had people from around the world writing to me, even in mission fields as far away as Mongolia, no jokes, Mongolia, saying, I thought I was the only person in the world this was happening to, and had no idea that the Bible said so much about it and so much had happened in history and so on. But a lot of people today are hurting ministers, hurting missionaries, wounded ministers, victims of character assassination. I got invited to the Creation Museum as a guest of Ken Hammond, personally shown around the Creation Museum, and invite back again when I opened up the Ark Encounter, because he had read this book and he ordered boxes of it, invited me there as his guest, took me around, because he said he didn't know that this had happened to so many other people and didn't know the historical and biblical roots and what a great book this is. And I've had so many people, sometimes ministers and missionaries, weeping with me, saying, you know, I never knew that other people went through this. I thought it was just me. And so it's so important that we understand what's going on. When I was a new Christian, I did not know any of this. I never thought Christians could backstab as many do. But we will have this presentation recorded and on the frontlinemissionessay.org under the video and audio gallery by God's grace before the end of tomorrow. Any questions, any comments on the tools and tactics of tyrants?
Dr. Peter, I didn't know that the army actually refused in Canada to refuse the orders. I didn't know that. The last thing I heard, they were ordered to go against their peaceful civilians standing up for their rights. And I was hoping for a long time now that the army is actually, it was centrally organized, as you know. The Officers Corps, the group of generals, who have basically almost a pyramid type of structure, that they actually stand up and start refusing to follow these politicians. So that actually happened in Canada.
It did. The military apparently flat refused. He tried to mobilize them early. That's why it took them about 3 weeks into the protest before they could mobilize anything. And they had to effectively remove the chief of police in Ottawa to get their way, because he was not willing to go along with it. And by the way, I don't know how many of you know, but in the early hours of this morning, the state of emergency has been abolished in Canada. The state of emergency has been suspended. And that's only 2 days after they had voted in Parliament to extend it. And my estimation and inclination from my contacts, I don't have confirmation of it, but it would appear that the Crown, bear in mind, Canada is a constitutional monarchy and the Queen has the power to fire the minister, the Prime Minister and the entire cabinet, as she did in 1975 when the Australian government was behaving extremely badly and they were literally swearing at one another in Parliament. And the whole Parliament was at a gridlock impasse. And so the Queen just fired the entire government of Australia, forced them to go back to the polls and change the whole equilibrium. People were shocked, said, can the Queen do that? Yes, she can. The monarch of England is the head of Australia, Canada, New Zealand as well. And so it is a constitutional monarchy. Remember, it's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and so on. So I don't know what else could have turned Justin Trudeau around from, he was going full steam ahead 2 days ago when people were saying in Poland, it's not needed, all the protests are over. And now he says, we don't need state of emergency, all the protests are over. And there's no blockages. Exactly what his opposition said. So what made him change in the last 2 days? There's been different countries in Central America, South America, and in Africa, who are part of the Commonwealth, saying, wait a minute, when Robert Mugabe acted like this, we suspended him from the Commonwealth. Why is Justin Trudeau allowed to get away with this without being suspended from Commonwealth? Now remember, the Queen's also head of the Commonwealth. And so there's pressure being brought to bear on, why is Justin Trudeau allowed to get away with this? And it's possible. Now, I know the Queen is 96. She's in her 70th year as Queen. She's sick. She's old. I didn't think her advisors around were much good. But it would appear that the Crown must have stepped in with an ultimatum or warning. Yes, I don't know what else could have made Justin Trudeau suddenly reverse position after he's doubled down so much in the last few weeks. So he might have realized he's going to get in serious trouble. I mean, he might have even been fired if he didn't do this. So that's my theory at this moment, because it's quite extraordinary. I've been following this closely. I've ministered in Canada. I've got some friends in Canada. I've got people who've been missionaries through Frontline who have come from Canada. And this is such a remarkable step. Now, I don't know yet whether they've unfrozen the bank accounts, returned the rigs, released the people who have arrested. So just ending the state of emergency doesn't necessarily mean things have been done, returned or resolved, or compensation paid to people who had their belongings destroyed and so on. But at least the state of emergency is suspended at this time. So that's breaking news.
The situation might change again if the Queen, God forbid, had to pass away and Charles becomes king, the globalist Charles.
Correct. Oh, Charles, Prince Charles is a globalist. He's a pal of Klaus Schwab. He's in the World Economic Forum. So along with Justin Trudeau, he's part of the same establishment. I couldn't imagine Prince Charles getting in his way. But I was very impressed to see some African and South American states in the Commonwealth saying, wait a minute, when Mugabe did this, we suspended him. Why aren't you doing this to Trudeau? And maybe there's some pressure building in the Commonwealth too, which would be very refreshing. So who does?
She's vice president. Trudeau's vice president. She sits on the board of Charles Schwab.
How about that? Goodness me.
I think that they did release people. They just did it, you know, they basically took them away and then they just released
them. That's some, but they're the four coordinators, they're four of the leaders of the truckers who I believe are still incarcerated. I know that most were released. They just got them out of the way, but the organizers, I think, are still in prison, because I saw a plea by one of the conservative senators just a couple of hours ago for them to release these four political prisoners, as they put them. So it's still early days, but some interesting things are going on in Canada. What's also interesting is the Canadian truckers have inspired people all over the world, even in New Zealand. They've got a protest going in its second week.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately, we don't really privately owned trucks, like in Canada, everybody owns their trucks.
Yes.
We had a car one, but it
that's correct.
Really, because we don't really, our government hasn't quite mandated anything yet. It's just companies, so it's difficult to get that underway and see how it can be effective.
But the US is planning the people.
Yes. In fact, some of it's already started. The people from Los Angeles started, and I hope they plan to get to Washington D.C. in time for the State of the Union address on the 1st of March. And apparently, Biden is fencing in. Funny, they don't believe in fences at their borders, but they believe in fences around the Capitol building. They're installing, at a cost of $19 million, fencing around the Capitol just for his inauguration speech. Honestly. And yes, he's meant to be the most popular president in American history. Wolfram.
On that topic, can you say the state of national emergency has been relieved? I mean, you asked me earlier now what's happening in Germany right now, in Austria. I mean, I think we see all over the world, you know, as soon as the pressure of the citizens on the street builds up, you know, they release the reins, they make promises, often they lie, and then they take up the reins later, I mean, in accordance with the Solana tactics that we see for the last 2 years. So I wouldn't be too enthusiastic.
Correct. No, indeed. It just is very surprising. I don't think anybody saw this coming, that Justin Trudeau would have backed off within 2 days of getting Parliament to vote it through. And by the way, you do realise that Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party is a minority party. They're only ruling at the good graces of the NDP, which is a National Democratic People's Party, I think it is, which is a socialist bunch, who opposed his father's state of emergency that he enforced in the 1970s to real terrorists, to actually hijacking, blowing up and killing people, kidnapping and so on. And it's considered a shameful part of Canada's history that they had this state of emergency back in the 70s, imposed by Pierre Trudeau. Interesting, the NDP on this occasion voted for the state of emergency, whereas traditionally they've been for civil liberties. So a lot of hypocrisy here.
Are there any relation between Pierre and this Trudeau?
Yes, he's meant to be his father.
Oh.
Pierre Trudeau, yeah. I mean, that's another story. But it, yes, so it's a bit disturbing in any democracy when you've got the son of a previous leader being lead, you know, like, why? Is this, it's not meant to be a monarchy. It's not meant to be hereditary. Is he really the most gifted person in the country? It's just that he is the protege of Klaus Schwab, basically, which he is.
With the COVID narrative falling apart and maybe then having to let go of the reins a little bit, because I also don't trust them. I also think that they just do what they want to do. Until things get a little bit hot, then maybe they continue to relax. But when this Ukraine thing now, with Russia now, all of a sudden, immediately, massive invasion of Ukraine all over the world, and everybody is really like up in arms about this. I mean, in the West, I think they should care. And then Western people, the average person in the street, cares far more about the Ukraine border than they do about their own border.
Correct.
If the US citizens don't realize that their border is basically open. Our border is open. The British border is basically open if you can get across the canal. I mean, what's more important to the average man on the street? And it seems to me the mainstream media knows, because they're right. I speak to people and they go, have you seen what's going on? And Putin's this and Putin that. And I'm like, well, hang on, let's be skeptical. They've been lying us to death for the last 2 years. Yes. Why are we just taking the CNN and BBC and Sky News narrative at all?
Right. So that's so important. We've got to say something about the Ukraine war today. Remember last week, Biden's State Department said Putin's definitely going to invade Ukraine Wednesday, which was last Wednesday, last week. And so actually it's now happened today. But they're leaving out a lot of important facts. First of all, remember George Orwell, 1984, he says, the totalitarian state continually needs foreign wars to distract people from repression at home. So we know that. The other thing I'm deeply concerned about here is that this is an opportunity for China to move on Taiwan while everyone's distracted, which is far more serious. But aside from that, going back a few steps, the average person is making hysterical assumptions based on misinformation. First of all, bear in mind that the entire Donetsk region, the Donbass region, which includes the Republic of Donetsk and of Luhansk, seceded from Ukraine back in 2014. Fighting stopped in August 2014. In January 2015, there was a ceasefire with the present borders recognized by Ukraine at the Treaty of Minsk since January 2015. Russians have been supplying arms to the separatist states of Luhansk and Donetsk since 2014. Now, in those areas, Ukrainian is 3.5% the home language. Russian is the overwhelmingly majority language. It's Russian demographically, it's Russian culturally, it's Russian linguistically. And when Ukraine had a coup d'etat organized by the American CIA, which toppled the pro-Russian president back in 2014, then the Russian majority eastern parts of Ukraine said, well, if you're going to join NATO, so we're going to leave. We want to rather be part of Mother Russia. And so they seceded. And they could easily do it, and actually had referendums and so on and so forth, because they were the majority, just as Crimea did, where 97% of people were Russian. So Crimea, Luhansk, and Donetsk, they seceded back in 2014. This is old news. The media today is making out when Russian troops move into those areas that they're invading Ukraine. Well, they're just leaving out. It's a very complex situation in Ukraine.
Where's Chernobyl? Is Chernobyl in those areas?
No.
So
it's in Ukraine, but
deep into
maybe that's a bit deeper. So the whole thing going here is that if America had made such a mess of the situation in Ukraine, and when they speak about protecting democracy in Ukraine, bear in mind, Ukraine is not really a democracy at this moment. It's got a client state of the Biden administration of the State Department. It's a corrupt government. It's been installed by one of these color revolutions, which had CIA fingerprints all over it. That's not even a theory. I mean, that's pretty accepted. And nevertheless, while we've got all the sympathy in the world for the Ukrainian people and the Christians in Ukraine, and they don't deserve this, and they've been treated abominably by the West before, that we've looked at a previous presentation. I've got lecture notes of the Ukraine situation on table for anyone who wasn't here for that. But quite aside from that, the American government's been stirring by getting Ukraine to move into NATO and even talking about them becoming a member of EU. Now, This is considered, you've crossed the line from Russia's side, and they've been warned a long time. They're meddling. This is akin to when Khrushchev was playing the fool in Cuba and setting up Russian military bases in Cuba, and it was considered too close to America. This is like the Cuban Missile Crisis the other way around. And Russia's got some legitimate concerns about this. And anyway, it's a complex situation, and it's not our concern. It certainly shouldn't be the Americans' concern. They should be more concerned about their northern neighbor, Canada, and their southern neighbor, Mexico, and the open border, which people are pouring across. That's more legitimate concern. Why are they concerned about Ukraine's border? And the Ukrainian president even pleaded with the American government to shut up. They carried on and on, and they even said, we haven't asked for aid, we haven't asked you to get involved, please just, you're aggravating the situation. Because knowing what's going on right now, the Americans kept saying, Putin's going to invade, and they have been, according to a friend of mine who's a missionary in Ukraine, just 50 k's from the border, and he's been there for about 18 years, he said just a week ago to me, nobody that he knows in Ukraine believes that Russia had any intention of invading Ukraine, but that this was being put up in order to create a crisis that Biden could get some credit for before the midterm elections, that he had actually saved the day and prevented Ukraine and Russia going to war, because he hasn't achieved anything, they needed something. And I think that they've been picking a fight. And in this, to make it worse, is the July-August chaos in how America fled in disgrace from Afghanistan, raised the eyebrows of China, thinking, oh, we can probably invade Taiwan and get away with it. And Putin started thinking, wait a minute, I could probably amalgamate Dinesh and Lahash into Russia while we're about it. I mean, with this idiot Biden. And the American military is still led by the idiots who lost the war in Afghanistan and fled in such a catastrophic, disastrous, shameful, humiliating way. So this is bizarre. But basically, if the US State Department had left well enough alone, and if the US media had not been stoking the fires, there might not even be a war in Ukraine right now. Not to mention the meddling to try and get Ukraine to join NATO and the EU, which is a direct threat to Russia. So the end of it is, not wanting to take sides here, but it's a complex situation which has nothing to do with any of us, and certainly nothing to do with the United States. If they just stay out of it, the people there could probably have solved the problem without any shots being fired. So the way it's being put right now, I think, is a lot of, what are you talking, beating the war drums. And it's not good, because if this escalates out of control, you could have nuclear exchanges. It's just disastrous.
America's all these sanctions that they're putting against, about apartheid, yeah, and about, a lot of travel bans,
yeah,
and things.
None of that helps. Because,
because
Russia recognized that economic sanctions is an act of war. I mean, sanctions are economic warfare. It's not a peaceful option. Sanctions can lead to loss of jobs and starvation and so on. So sanctions are not considered something that's benign. And basically, if they'd stop meddling, things could be a lot safer and better. But anyway, what's going on at the moment? I don't know if Russia's got a short-term goal of just absorbing those Russian-majority areas which were part of Ukraine, or if they are now thinking, we've had enough, we can take the whole of Ukraine to prevent it being annexed into the NATO-EU sphere. So, but he wouldn't have dared to do this if Trump was in the White House. And America would not have been meddling anyway. And Trump had a better relationship with Putin anyway. I think this whole situation has gotten out of control, and it's the fault of a stolen election, a corrupt, evil government that shouldn't be in the White House. It's mismanaged the last year abominably.
Where is that president, the 2014 one? Because according to what they're saying is that Putin wants to reinstate him in the interim, bring him back, and then
probably
get new elections.
He's friendly to Russia. He probably fled to Russia because his life was probably in danger if he stayed in Ukraine at that time. I mean, the color revolution was quite ugly, you might recall, 2014. Yeah, it was not good. And so this isn't something like, when the US government tries to portray that they actually care about human rights and they care about borders and they care about people who are suffering, they haven't done anything about Myanmar, where Burma, where the Buddhist dictatorship slaughtering Christian Koreans. They don't care about what's going on in most of the world. When they choose to be involved in a place, there always happens to be some mineral riches and oil involved. You know, it's very hard not to be cynical and wonder whether there's not a whole lot of other things involved. So, but the biggest concern is wars are distraction, while the New World Order moves in to control more things. So just like pandemics, wars and pandemics, governments love them. And the New World Order really loves these things.
Just to come back to the truckers, they are or were going after the instigators and the leaders and freezing bank accounts, financial option. What's your thoughts about moving your money to crypto, seeing that crypto is involved with the whole organizational regulation blockchain?
Mm-hmm. You've got to understand the banks are in the hands of New World Order people.
Yes.
So generally speaking, we should be very cautious. It's better to have, as I say, gold, groceries, guns, and God. You know, what you want to do is be as self-sufficient as you can. You can't put all your treasures in, well, it's not just, you know, where moth can rust and thieves steal. We need to lay up treasures in heaven, of course, first and foremost. But we've got to try and become self-sufficient so we're not dependent on the state. And remember that the bank can just freeze your accounts like that. I mean, it's theft. But the banks are involved in the New World Order in a heavy way. Most of the banks are actually hideous. They Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers. Klaus Schwab is a top leader, not just of World Economic Forum, but in the Bilderbergers as well. Very dangerous. I wouldn't trust any of them. And to think that most people thought you raise money through GoFundMe, it's going to come to you. Who knew that they could just like that seize it because it threatened them? So this should be a wake-up call to a lot of people not to put our faith in banks.
Yeah. The stock market fell, I think, 29%. And I think worldwide, a lot of people are making a lot of money right now.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people saying, I will never use GoFundMe again. And because, I mean, they did it of their own accord. Now, GiveSendGo didn't. They were going to give it all. They were frozen against their power.
Yeah.
But GoFundMe showed no ethical principles at all. Criminals. I believe Santa Cruz is going after them because they broke American law in how they acted. Interesting days we're living in.